Blog Talk Radio.
If it's Sunday, it's Wrestling Night in America here on PWTorchDailyCast.com. Good Sunday evening for April 16th, 2023. I am Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks. And if you've ever seen the Simpsons episode, very famous episode, very well received, called Homer at the Bat, where Homer Simpson is deep on the bench of his company softball team because they've hired a bunch of ringers, and yet, one by one, something strange and unrelated to the previous one happens to these ringers that leads to Homer getting an opportunity and getting to be at bat. And I can't help but think about that episode when I think about where we are here tonight on Wrestling Night in America, because this is one of the rare times on a non-pay-per-view evening that I'm flying solo, as I cannot find a single co-host who is available tonight. It never happens. Everybody is otherwise indisposed with various commitments and things of that nature. So we are kind of up to you as far as what we talk about and how far we get tonight. So your participation is very important tonight, more so than any other night. 515-605-9345 is the number to call, and WNIALivecast@gmail.com is where you can send your emails. A dozen people, more than a dozen, I contacted about co-hosting here tonight, and none were available. So I've never had that happen before. We do have a co-host lined up for next week, however, so we will not run into this issue. PWTorch.com contributor Darren Lilly will join me right here next weekend to talk Impact Rebellion, which is actually on the air right now. And I have one eye on Rebellion, one eye on the switchboard here, one eye on my notes. So, Rebellion is going on. We'll talk about that as well as the fallout from that on Impact Thursday night with Darren Lilly right here next week on Wrestling Night in America. Rebellion tonight, the card, just to run it down real quick. I wasn't here last weekend. Thank you for Kelly Wells. To Kelly Wells for taking the reins last week and running the show in my absence. PCO versus Eddie Edwards in a last rights match taking place tonight. We also have Dirty Dango, Joe Hendry, and Santino Marella against Deaner Angels and Sami Callihan. We have Ace Austin and Chris Bay versus the Motor City Machine Guns in an Ultimate X match for the tag titles. Trey Miguel versus Jonathan Gresham versus Mike Bailey in an elimination match for the X Division Championship. A Team Dreamer and a 10-man tag. It's Tommy Dreamer, Bhupinder Gunter, Gucher, Kazarian, Killer Kelly, and Yuya Yamura versus Team Bully, Bully Ray, Brian Myers, Kenny King, Masha Slamovich, and Moose in a hardcore war. Jordan Grace versus Deonna Purrazzo for the Knockouts previous episode of Impact on Thursday night saw Mickey James unable to defend her Knockouts championship due to injury tonight, so she had to forfeit the title, and Jordan Grace, Deonna Purrazzo will battle tonight over that vacant Knockouts championship. And then we have Kushida versus Steve Macklin for the Impact World title. Same situation there. Josh Alexander suffering an injury. He's going to be out for an extended period of time. Had to relinquish the Knockout or the Impact World Championship, rather. And it'll be Kushida and Steve Macklin vying for that vacant title here at Rebellion. So that is the big show we're keeping an eye on here tonight, if you want to talk about that or any of the other big shows in pro wrestling tonight. Again, that number, 515-605-9345. Press 1 to chat. And you can email us at WNIALivecast@gmail.com. Of course, we've got all the WrestleMania fallout as well that we're recovering from. Backlash coming up in just a few short weeks, 3 weeks from tonight. So Backlash is on May 6th. So we've got two more Sundays. On that Sunday right before, we'll be previewing Backlash. That would be the 30th. We'll be previewing Backlash, and on May 6th, we will go on the air live right after Backlash goes off the air, taking your phone calls and emails in reaction to that show. Look forward to that as well. So without further ado, let's go to the phones. It's Ryan from Cumberland, Maryland, leading us off at the 814 area code. Ryan, welcome to Wrestling Night in America tonight. What's the first of your three questions for us?
My first question is on this Wembley Stadium show AEW is doing. What match do you think they could do that could possibly sell out that arena? I think Eric Bischoff has suggested CM Punk against Bill Goldberg. And I'm always wondering if they'll ever do that Shaq versus Big Show match.
Yeah. Well, that's a good question. Goldberg is apparently a free agent. I don't really think he fits into what AEW is doing. I don't see him as a fit in AEW. Let's just say that. I mean, they could get one match out of him. I'm not sure. I'm not even sure against who. So I would rule that out. Certainly CM Punk is in the news. There seems to be wheels in motion for CM Punk to return to AEW, even after his since-deleted Instagram missive criticizing Chris Jericho, criticizing Jon Moxley, among others. And that's going to be a real situation to watch. So, no word on whether or not they're going to get Punk back in time. I'm sure that if Punk is going to return, that they will want to have him back in the fold in time for that show, because that's definitely a show you want to load up on, Wembley Stadium. That's a lot of seats to fill. So you're going to need an attractive card, an attractive main event in order to sell those tickets, although I think they'll sell a lot right away anyway. I think you could do MJF if he's still champion at the time. I wouldn't run away from, the Bischoff idea of Punk and Goldberg, of course, features two wrestlers who made names for themselves outside of AEW. And if you're AEW, you got to be careful about that, because, you want to have and you want to be able to showcase wrestlers who become stars in AEW. You want them to have the rub of drawing a large crowd and main eventing a show of that size. So I think MJF, more than anyone else right now, and that show is months away, so a lot can happen between now and then. Guys can get really hot, stars can take off and things like that. So my initial impression is MJF in some match. I think he's, more than anyone else who would be considered AEW homegrown, would be a guy who they could put in that position to sell that. Now, as for his opponent, they're setting up some of the pillars, Darby Allin, Jack Perry, as opponents over the next few months for MJF. I don't feel like any of them are at that spot where they would be able to main event a Wembley Stadium show against MJF. But again, that show is so far down the line. Could one of them get to a spot where they would be considered in that role? Maybe. It could depend on the undercard. If you've got CM Punk on the undercard, if you've got, a Sting retirement match on the undercard, if you've got, if you've buttressed that main event with other big names up and down the card, you may be able to get away with it. MJF, I guess if you want the best of both worlds, MJF and CM Punk maybe. But I don't know. I don't like the Bischoff idea, just because I don't think Goldberg fits in with what AEW is doing. And it would feel, I think to AEW fans, it would feel very forced and very obvious, that they're putting him in that position because of the Wembley Stadium show. So I would rule that out. But yeah, MJF at least is really the first one that comes to my mind, the first real obvious one.
Okay. My second question has to do with Impact Wrestling. Is there any time in the history of wrestling where both the women's champion and the men's champion pretty much had to drop the titles due to injury, like around the same time period?
I don't think so. I think, titles have been vacated. We've seen this when companies have kind of reset. We saw it in WCW where in storyline the titles were all vacated. But in terms of like legitimate injuries causing titles to be vacated, I certainly can't think of another time in history that's happened. It's very unique and unfortunate for AEW, because You've had the Mickie James storyline of her, if she was going to lose, she would retire, all leading to her winning that Knockouts Championship and then having a pretty solid reign up to that point where she got hurt. So that's disappointing. I think they have a strong match tonight with Deonna Purrazzo and Jordynne Grace as far as a potential replacement. I think those are the two biggest names in the Knockouts division right now that they can draw from as legitimate title contenders to put in this spot. So I think they did a nice job there. And really the same goes with Josh Alexander. I think he was just short of a year of holding the Impact title, and he's done a really nice job of it. They've really transformed Alexander from a tag team wrestler who made his bones as part of the North with Ethan Page into a legitimate top-level main event wrestler. And Impact hasn't always succeeded in doing that. They've taken guys and tried to put them at the top of the card, and it hasn't always worked. But I think it's absolutely worked with Josh Alexander, which is a credit to Impact's booking as well as a credit to Alexander's talents. And to see it end the way it has is really disappointing. And unlike the women, I'm not really sure about this match that's going to be for the Impact World title. I think it would be a really good match. But I think Steve Maclin is a good choice as the antagonist to have in this role, because I think it seemed like it was eventually going to lead to Maclin versus Josh Alexander, perhaps even at Rebellion, and they may have even announced it before the injury. But Kushida taking his place doesn't feel I'm not sold on the decision to go with him as the protagonist here, the babyface to face Steve Maclin. I just don't feel like he's got a legitimate chance of winning. And if he does win, it just won't feel, I don't know. He's been in Impact for such a short time, I guess, and you know, has been not been portrayed necessarily as a top tier main event wrestler, that I don't know about him as the choice as opponent. Again, I think it'll be a really good match, and you know, the fans will buy the near falls and all that kind of stuff that we see. But I think I would have liked to have seen a stronger babyface opponent to face Maclin. And if Impact doesn't have that on the roster, then I think that speaks to their booking of babyfaces outside of Josh Alexander. You know, I think the top pushed babyfaces outside of Josh Alexander were probably Tommy Dreamer and PCO. And I'm not sure those are guys you want to put in a position like this. I mean, even Mike Bailey, who is in the X Division elimination match, I wouldn't be afraid to put him against Steve Maclin there. You know, former X Division champion, had a really strong X Division title run. I would have liked to have seen him and Maclin instead of Kushida. I think that would have been a stronger match. But anyway, no, to get back to your original question, Ryan, I don't ever recall a situation that Impact is finding themselves in, just really bad luck heading into one of their very few pay-per-views they do of the year. So we'll go back to you, Ryan, for your third and final question for us tonight.
Final question is, last night I went to an indie show that featured Erwin R. Scheister, because it was April 15th, tax day, with him addressing the crowd, and even his briefcase came into play in one of the championship matches as James Ellsworth knocked out one of his opponents. He had won the tag team titles. So, you ever heard of a wrestling federation doing a tax themed wrestling event?
I can't. There is really only one day of the calendar year where you can get away with a tax themed wrestling event, and that's April 15th. And I don't think that's a really big draw that especially major wrestling organizations have used. I think you can get away with it on the indies when you can have these kind of gimmicky events and gimmicky nights, especially if you can have a legend like IRS, who probably isn't going to, in and of himself, be a draw. But, you know, he'll get people talking and get people like Ryan calling into a show and get recognition for this event that they probably otherwise would not have. Ryan, was IRS advertised ahead of time, or was he a special surprise?
No, he was actually, if you bought a ticket, a front row ticket, you got a free picture with him and an autographed picture. So it was a pretty good deal to get that It's even $10 less if you got it on a certain day, so it's only $30, depending on what day you got that front row ticket on.
Okay. Yeah, so I would say, Ryan, this is definitely a first, at least for me. So we've got two firsts in 2 days in a row, a tax-themed independent show on Saturday night and an Impact Rebellion pay-per-view where you have the two major singles champions forfeiting their title ahead of the show because of injury and both vacant titles up for grabs. So we are living in unique times, Ryan. Thank you for calling in tonight. Good to hear from you as always.
And I do think Sting and MGF would make a pretty cool match for that Wembley show. Thanks for taking the call.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, Sting, MJF, I think if you had spent a lot of time portraying Sting as a top-level guy, then maybe. And who knows? They could, over the next few months, start having him win a lot of singles matches. I don't even know if that's something Sting wants to do. I kind of think he likes the role he has now where he's wrestling in tag matches and he's Darby Allin's confidant and things like that. I don't know that he wants the pressure of having to sell out a stadium show in another country and being in the main event title match, you know? I think he's kind of past that with his age and everything like that. And I think if you're AEW, you can still get the advantages of having Sting on the card without having him on the main event, especially if you do a retirement match. And I have no inside knowledge that that's coming up. I know that Sting has mentioned that in interviews, and he mentioned it, you know, even on television this past week. You know, he's a lot closer to the end of his career than he is the beginning. So, you know, wouldn't surprise me if that played a role in the next year. And if, you know, Sting plans to retire the next year and he lets Tony Khan know, you know, Tony might say, hey, how would you like to do it at Wembley? And if you're Sting, what better way to end your career than in front of a large stadium full of people at probably the biggest AEW attended show of all time? Could be worse. So that's kind of my thinking on it. But, you know, we will have to wait and see. And it's not just Rebellion happening tonight with the Ultimate X tag title match going on right now with Ace Austin and Chris Bay against the Motor City Machine Guns. But also NXT has a big show, Spring Breakin', taking place on April 25th. So that is not this coming Tuesday, but the following Tuesday. This is a show that I'll be sure to talk with Darren Lilly about next week here on Wrestling Night in America. But only one match announced for that thus far, Carmelo Hayes versus Grayson Waller for the NXT Championship. Again, this is not a PLE. It's not an NXT PLE. It is a special episode of NXT television. So I assume that card will fill out this week on Tuesday night. So we will talk NXT Rebellion. We'll review the area Impact Rebellion, and we will preview NXT Spring Breakin' next week here on Wrestling Night in America. And of course, anything that is made for Backlash on television this week, we will also touch upon, if anything. There's still a lot of time before that. So let's go into the bag of emails. This is John from no location given. John, one of our frequent emailers, who always gives us something to think about here. He says, hi, Greg. Hope you and the listeners had a great Easter. WWE programming has had many great qualities since Triple H took over, and we saw the best of it at WrestleMania, with just about everyone delivering awesome performances. But I think one of the few weaknesses of Triple H's reign has been booking the women. Rhea Ripley, in my opinion, has been the shining light in the women's division for the best part of a year now. But she also happens to be in a faction with men, although she's the best part of Judgment Day, in my opinion, and not used in the same traditional way the other women on the roster are. She's gotten in the face of and been physical with the men, and that adds a layer of protective seal to her character to interact with a wide variety of characters and get more mic time than the common female performer on the show. However, besides Rhea, it feels like a bunch of women are either not being used to their potential or just floundering and drowning in general in a sea of indifference, where the fans just have had no reason to truly get behind someone with any great enthusiasm. Let's go over some names. Bianca Belair has been feuding with lesser priority heels like Sonya Deville and Carmella, who, while being very good in their roles, have not developed that well and presented as legitimate threats to her title. Bianca herself has been good in her role and a great role model in general, who is beloved by just about all fans and producing great matches, but I'm not sure WWE is getting the best out of her by putting her in uninspiring feuds fairly often with not much depth against people who aren't really at the height of being over. Becky Lynch has been pretty good as well, but if you look at her in 2018, 2019 to now, it feels as if them wanting to separate her and Bianca because they're both babyfaces has come at both their expenses, because the depth of the women's division in terms of time and effort invested and who is truly over is very shallow. Charlotte has been very good in her role recently, but you know what you're going to get from her, and she's a veteran who probably in the twilight of her career, depending on how long she plans on going. If the rest of the division was as well-oiled a machine, then I think you can have both Bianca and Becky do their things separately against opponents who are truly over and in the right place on the card to fit talent level and readiness. Becky's feud with Damage Control was pretty good, I thought, but gradually lost steam, and I didn't really get what they were truly fighting over by the end, and now it looks like Becky is going to feud with Trish, which could be good, but we'll have to see. I'd say Becky has been a solid B-plus over the last year in terms of her presentation and how she's been used, but an A-plus could have been possible with some tweaks in building other women. Question. If you book two or three singles feuds each year for Becky and Bianca until next year's WrestleMania separately or their paths crossing, who would they be against? All right, so I'll tackle this question before we get to the next portion. I do agree generally that the women's division has been pretty poorly booked under Triple H, and I think that's a sentiment that a lot of people share. I think Bianca Belair is a really good example of someone who has done a really nice job with what she's been asked, but when you compare where she was last year at WrestleMania compared to where she is this year at WrestleMania, she's just not nearly as hot. And part of that is the booking of her, you know, in a vacuum, but part of it is also the opponents that she's had to work with, which is what John brings up. I think Becky Lynch is in a similar boat where she was once the biggest star in the company probably, and now she's, you know, in a women's tag title feud. And granted, it's against a prominent group in Damage Control and features Hall of Famers, Lita and Trish Stratus involved. But it does feel like a step down, and I do agree with John that it feels like by trying to keep Bianca and Becky separate, it's almost like it's damaging both of them because there just isn't enough for them to do to really sink their teeth into. You know, they stay busy, but it's nothing of great value, I don't think. And so, you know, you're left with Bianca feeling cold, even coming off a really good match at WrestleMania with Asuka, and you've got Becky feeling cold. You've got Damage Control, which started out with so much promise. And part of their problem is the booking, but part of it is also they just don't have a lot of chemistry. There just hasn't been a real mission statement from this group. And all of that has conspired to make three what could be, you know, who are very talented women, Bayley, Dakota Kai, and Io Sky, feel, again, very cold. And then you have the Trish Stratus heel turn, which, like, I don't know if anyone's really clamoring for heel Trish at this stage of her career, right? Bring the legends back, let them get a couple pops, let them do something, and then, you know, send them on their merry way. But to have Lita in such a prominent role, who was never a really great wrestler to begin with, and now it's really rough to watch her in the ring. And then you have Trish Stratus, who's now a heel. I mean, maybe heel Trish versus Becky Lynch is interesting. You know, the bringing together of two generations. But boy, heel Trish is just not something that I wonder if the fan base at large is super into. And who knows, they could book her really well, but I think, you know, to go back to John's point, there isn't a lot of confidence that that's going to be done just because of how poorly the women's division has been booked on a whole. Rhea Ripley, I kind of disagree with that because I think you could make the argument that she's probably the hottest woman in terms of momentum that WWE has right now. A combination of her really strong match with Charlotte Flair at WrestleMania, the interactions that she has with Dominic especially, and she's, you know, the heat that she gets by virtue of Dominic's amazing heel heat that he's been getting, and just Rhea's presentation and her confidence, I think she is probably the, in terms of momentum, the hottest woman in the company right now. But now that she's champion, it's all about, okay, who are her opponents that are going to keep her at that level, especially if Charlotte is taking time off again and you're not going to get into an immediate rematch there. You know, there was some teasing of Rhea Ripley and Bianca Belair crossing paths. We have the WWE draft coming up in 2 weeks, so that could rearrange things a little bit. And kind of interested to see where everybody lands from there. So going back to John's second question, he says, quickly going over some of the other names, Asuka, start and stop pushes, Liv Morgan and Raquel Rodriguez, they've been okay, but perhaps a little over-pushed and under-pushed, respectively. Lacey Evans, inconsistent presentation and appears on TV for a while and then disappears. Piper Niven looks promising but hasn't been protected enough. Emma, not been in the ring enough and off TV often. Nikki Cross, on and off TV and start and stop pushes. Candice LeRae, similar cases, many other women considered lesser priority on the roster. I'm hoping I didn't forget anyone, but mostly everyone else has been given very little to no character development or have been used sparingly on WWE programming. I think Bianca and Rhea can be the faces of the company 5 years from now, and I think it's difficult to predict how long Becky will be around, but she could be a centerpiece attraction herself right now, given how amazingly talented she is and how popular she still is. You can have the three of them and possibly Asuka, Charlotte, and Bayley, and have six clearly defined top-tier megastars who you can easily protect and headline with at any time, with the possibility of inviting other women to join them at the top when they're ready. Question. If you had to pick a clearly defined top-tier of women to always headline with, who would it be on the list? You can pick any number of women for your list. Well, I would say the problem with WWE's booking is not who they're choosing to be at the top. It's how they're booking them while at the top. So I absolutely agree with Bianca Belair, Rhea Ripley, and Becky Lynch. I mean, those are the three that really stand out to me. Charlotte Flair is very polarizing, but I absolutely think that she belongs there as well. That gives you four really strong women across two shows. I think that's a good start. You know, and then I think the next level down, you've probably got Asuka, you've got Bayley. You've got, you know, some of the women like that, Io Sky, and those women have the upward mobility and the potential to be in that top tier. But I think those four, you absolutely start the conversation with. A couple more questions John has. Let's get to the next one. I have some ideas on how to improve the use of women. One, have more variety in feuds other than fighting for a championship. Two, give more character development and stop throwing a bunch of women in multi-person matches without giving a reason to truly care for them. An example is the fairly frequent fatal four-way and five-way and six-way matches for number one contendership, just thrown on the card last minute with some people who haven't been on TV in weeks being involved without any reason given. Number three, do more featured singles matches with video packages and given top billing on Raw, SmackDown, and PLEs. Four, try to show more women in situations other than in the ring or backstage in large groups, yelling and arguing in a stereotypical sort of way. An example is show them in more real situations, showcasing more multifaceted personalities, chatting to arena staff, on the phone to friends and family as someone enters or leaves a room or in the background, entering the arena, sit-down interviews outside the arena, etc. Not everyone is suited to a multifaceted personality because of poor English or not great acting ability, but I have belief that a lot of the women's roster with confidence and genuine faith in them could succeed. Number five, when they're in the ring, give certain women more squash matches with different people that showcases their best moves instead of only having the women constantly share ring time with other women they're in a feud with in tag matches and rematches. Number six, make a clear assessment and categorize women on the main roster and have a structure for who's in the top tier, i.e. Bianca, Becky, Asuka, Rhea, etc., who's in the middle tier, and who is in the tier just below, and have a tier for young women on the rise who may not be a priority right now but have great potential. Have a clear roadmap for both the women's and men's rosters. If you do that, you may avoid what happened on SmackDown with Liv and Raquel on the mic, doing what they may not be best at in front of a seemingly disinterested crowd. These are just some ideas. Question. What do you think of these ideas? What are the big strengths and weaknesses in the women's division as you see it, and any ideas you would add? Yeah, I think these are probably pretty solid ideas. Certainly, I think the big one is more feuds that are just not in the title picture. You know, more meaningful feuds with women down on the totem pole, because I think that allows the women, obviously, to get more screen time, more TV time, and builds them up as potential women who could be a tier above where they might be at that moment. So that to me is the biggest thing. WWE has had problems with that before, where the only women's feuds seem to be around the women's title. And you also have to take into account, you know, the women's division just is not as deep as it has been before. And so, you know, part of that is booking, but part of that is things outside of WWE's booking control. And so it'll be interesting to see, you know, NXT has a large crop of women right now. And many of them, you could argue, are ready for the main roster. You know, you've got the Roxanne Perez's, the Cora Jade's, you know, the Zoe Starks, some of these women who are main roster ready or very close to that, who could add a lot of depth to the main roster. But you don't want to have a lot of women on the main roster if you're not going to give TV time to them. That's where you see Lacey Evans in the situation she's in, or Piper Niven. And, you know, John brings up a lot of the inconsistent TV time that the women have been getting. And that inconsistent TV time doesn't allow you to expose their personalities to the audience. So it becomes a real struggle with all of that involved. So the next question, John says, the women's, to put a bow on that, the women's roster as a whole looks insanely talented, but I feel some of the chess pieces are in the wrong places on the board. On to my other topic, Brock versus Cody at Backlash. In my opinion, Cody has to win and win clean. Wins should be emphasized more on WWE programming, and Cody would gain more than Lesnar from winning this match. Lesnar is the beast and will remain so, and he's not a full-time performer anyway. While Cody waits for another undisputed Universal title shot, I think he has to win as much as possible in the big matches. Sure, if you have a story planned with him that requires him to lose an occasional match, do it, but not at this point the way WrestleMania ended, and a loss for Cody probably only works if you're planning to turn him heel, but he is just so insanely popular right now with the fans. And because of his injury time off, I think he should have a long babyface run and also deliver quality matches consistently, at least until around next year's WrestleMania or later. Question, if Cody pinning Lesnar clean is off the table because WWE wants to protect Lesnar, how would you have their match at Backlash end without a disqualification or count out or no contest? Keep up the great work. Thank you, John. And as always, you too can send an email for it to be discussed on air, wnialivecast@gmail.com. So I'm going to cheat a little bit, and my answer, my legitimate answer to John's question is, if Cody pinning Lesnar is off the table because WWE wants to protect Lesnar, I wouldn't have booked this in the first place, because I think John is right. Cody does clean win. You know, a lot of people making the argument that Rhodes should have lost at WrestleMania, the crux of their argument is built upon the idea that Rhodes needed to overcome obstacles before he gets to winning the undisputed WWE Championship. I guess as if, you know, the obstacles of being Stardust and tearing your pec and being on the shelf are not enough. I guess there's more obstacles that he needs to overcome. So, I mean, if you're really solidly in that camp, have Lesnar beat him clean. I don't know. You know, part of it depends, too, on when is the roadmap for Rhodes to get that rematch with Reigns. Because if it's not anytime soon, if it's, say, SummerSlam, then you could have Lesnar win at Backlash and have time to build Cody back up. If it's, you know, even after SummerSlam, if you're going to do Reigns versus Cody. Well, I'm back. I've never had that happen before. I was not just kicked off Skype, but my entire computer shut down. I got the blue screen of death, so we're back. Getting back to answering John's question about Brock versus Cody, you know, I think if you're going to the Cody versus Reigns rematch, well, anytime soon, I think naturally you have to have Cody win. But to kind of play along with John's hypothetical, if you want to protect Lesnar and want to have it end without a DQ or a count out or a no contest, I don't know. You could just have Cody just take a beating from Lesnar, kind of like John Cena did when Lesnar first came back, where he just gets absolutely brutalized and, like, survives it and just keeps wanting more and more and more. And then Lesnar, I don't know, slips out a banana peel, and Rhodes wins. And Rhodes shows that he can take that punishment and survive and still win. So I don't know. Maybe that's the scenario. Again, if you are absolutely married to the idea of having, you know, having Rhodes not win cleanly over Lesnar. And let me just say, I'm not sold 100% that they will have him win clean over Lesnar. Like, I could see a scenario where they don't. But I don't know. We'll see. Rhodes versus Lesnar at Backlash. Not officially announced, by the way. No matches for Backlash have been officially announced, but certainly that seems like the direction, as does, you know, Bad Bunny in a tag match or six-man tag. So I would bet on those. But we've got nothing announced officially so far. Let's go back to the phones. 410 area code is Reverend Keith from Baltimore, Maryland. Reverend Keith, welcome to Wrestling Night in America tonight.
How you doing tonight, Greg?
I'm doing well. Thank you, sir.
Good, good. I'm glad you're back, because I was like, he muted himself, and it just went dark, you know, and dead. So I'm glad you're back, and I hope you had a great vacation. You were missed. I promise to go easy on you tonight, Greg. I just want to talk about Collision, AEW Collision. I understand that this new TV show that AEW is scheduled to begin on July 8th will be a two-hour show. They're penciling it in as of now for the 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. slot. And also, there's a rumor going around that CM Punk may be the highlight of this two-hour show. What are your thoughts on not only the time slot, 7 to 9, because that's going to be rough for the summer months especially, and also the idea or the thought of CM Punk being the highlight of this show?
Yeah, along with CM Punk being the highlight, you hear rumors of a potential brand split with AEW happening where, you know, sort of like the WWE brand split, you have wrestlers dedicated to one show, another set of wrestlers dedicated to another show, which, you know, AEW definitely has the roster depth to do that. You know, there are a lot of guys in AEW who just don't seem to get the opportunity that they should because, you know, Dynamite is 2 hours and Rampage is 1 hour. And conceivably, in theory, if you had another 2 hours of programming, that would allow for some of these other wrestlers to, you know, to be built up as main event level wrestlers for pay-per-views and the like. So I think the danger is you don't want it to come out as another Rampage, which, you know, we saw what's happened with Rampage where it's become an afterthought. You know, AEW does you know, plug it on Dynamite and things like that. But really, Rampage is not a show to go out of your way to see, generally speaking. They have good matches, but they are often devoid of big stars. So AEW is doing what any good company that wants to make money is doing, which is putting their product out there as much as possible to get as much money as possible. You know, with two more hours of television comes more rights fees that AEW can get, more money they can make. It's the same reason WWE does Raw for 3 hours, right? Every fan complains about it. But WWE does it because they get extra money for 52 extra hours of television a year. And from a business perspective, I understand that. From a fan interest perspective, I could do without 3 hour Raws. So AEW is kind of the same way. You know, from a business perspective, it's great for them to do another 2 hours of television because they get another 2 hours of rights fees out of it. But as someone who is a consumer of as much wrestling as they possibly can during the normal course of business every week, that's a tough ask for me to devote another 2 hours to more wrestling. And you know, some fans are just going to reach their limit. Now, you put CM Punk on there, treat it like another episode of Dynamite. So, you know, it's not like Rampage where it feels like an afterthought, then maybe you've got something cooking. But I'll believe it when I see it. And, yeah, that time slot is tough. 7 to 9 p.m. on Saturdays, Saturday night historically, going back decades, has been a graveyard for television, not just professional wrestling, but television in general. It's the night people go out, you know? So, and maybe AEW doesn't care. Maybe it's all about getting the rights fees. Maybe, you know, there are low expectations for what viewership they can draw. Maybe they're trying to draw a different viewer who's at home on Saturday nights but is not watching Dynamite on Wednesdays or Rampage on Fridays. I don't know. But, again, from a business perspective, I get why AEW is doing it, but you run into the same – you run the risk of the same thing WWE did by adding a third hour of Raw, which is oversaturating the marketplace for your fans.
Okay, thank you for that answer, and I totally agree with you 100%. So we'll just have to wait and see. You know, it's going to be tough. My only thing is, if they're going to make this work, I feel, Greg, that they need to incorporate much of the talent, like the undercard, mid-card talent that is seldom used unless one watches Dark Elevation or Dark. They need to get these men and women reps. You know, they just begun the house show scene, and it's only been one thus far. But this would be the ideal opportunity for them to get the guys and ladies work, you know, so that you don't have people like Anna Jay missing spots every week and botching moves and stuff like that. So,
but
well,
I do
we'll
think,
see,
you know, Reverend Keith, I think you have to balance that, though, because if you do that, you run the risk of turning it into another Rampage where people see it as an unimportant show with second-tier or third-tier wrestlers in AEW that they don't have to make it a point to watch. And so I do think you have to balance that with the main attractions, whether that's CM Punk, whether that's the Young Bucks or Kenny Omega, the guys who aren't appearing on Rampage every week. So I do think, unless, you know, maybe AEW doesn't care if it turns into another Rampage. Maybe, again, it's all about the rights fees, and maybe they're, you know, pro wrestling has the reputation it does in the television industry because people watch it live. It's like live sports. You know, live sports are important,
right?
Because people watch it live.
Right.
It's DVR proof. But on a Saturday night from 7 to 9 p.m., you know, perhaps AEW and Turner Networks are banking on, you know, viewers watching this on DVR. And maybe they're taking that into account given the night and the time that it's on. So that's another aspect to it as well. But, yeah, I think, you know, what is AEW's end game here? Do they want to make it another Dynamite or do they want to make it another Rampage? Because those are the two directions they can go with it.
Right, and I agree. I think the medium, Greg, would be something similar to Ring of Honor. I don't know if you had an opportunity to watch Ring of Honor or if you have Honor Club. But Ring of Honor typically airs from 7 to 9 p.m., the first airing, the initial airing on Thursday nights, and it normally consists of 9 matches. Out of those 9 matches, 6 of them are quality matches. The other 3 may be squash matches or easily predictable outcome matches. So they could do it like that, you know, I could see. But you're right. You have to balance it if you want it to be highly viewed and highly respected, because otherwise, again, especially during the summer months, people are going to be out on Saturday nights anyway. So I do agree with that. There's a right way and a wrong way of projecting this new show. Moving forward, I do want to talk about NXT for a minute. I know you said you'd discuss it next week. I kind of like the direction in which they're going with the Carmelo Hayes, Grayson Waller title match that's coming up in spring break in. I kind of sensed they would go in that direction to give Grayson Waller his heat back after losing that Holly and hotly contested matchup to Johnny Gargano at their last pay-per-view. And I think this would be a good test for Carmelo, especially now that he's turned babyface. And you know Grayson Waller garners a lot of heat. I'm hoping they will add more story to it, you know, and we'll see where this takes us. I'm almost certain that Carmelo will retain and that this will probably be the send-off that Grayson Waller needs heading into the draft. What are your thoughts on that title match?
I wish Grayson Waller was in a stronger position heading into the title match, you know, coming off a big loss to Johnny Gargano where he could have easily won that. You know, I get wanting to put Gargano over. I get that he's a main roster talent, and he's legendary within NXT. This is, you know, kind of one of his hallmark matches. But if you knew that you were going to have Waller next in line, I don't know. I just don't like the idea of challengers kind of backing into title matches the way Grayson Waller, it feels like he did. And, you know, he's also coming off a pretty major loss to Bron Breakker inside the cage. Pretty decisive, in fact. And, in fact, I was surprised how decisive it was when he lost that. So he's lost a lot of his major matches. And so I do think it makes sense that he faces Hayes because he is probably the biggest heel, biggest star heel on the roster. But I just wish they had the foresight to book him a little stronger in some of those matches so that he would feel like this was an earned opportunity. Even though he is a heel and a lot of his presentation is like, you know, he's whiny and he doesn't earn what he gets and things like that. But, you know, when you're talking about the major title within the brand, I mean, that's something that's sacred. You don't want to be giving those title shots out to just any Tom, Dick, and Harry. And so you want to, even for a heel, the style of Grayson Waller, you would like to present him as a little more serious of a challenge than I feel like they've done so far.
True. Either way, though, it will be a high-quality match, and
sure.
I do believe that this will be his send-off to the main, especially considering what Triple H said, that, you know, it's open, the draft, that is open to everyone. So hopefully we'll get some guys as well as ladies moved up. But I do agree with your sentiments earlier. I think when you were responding to one of John's comments or questions about you don't want to just call them up and not have anything for them. That's been my argument all along. As much as I'm against someone like Indy Hartwell finally reaching the pinnacle of success in NXT after 3.5 to 4 years, I'd rather see her do that than get called up and you see her once a month.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, for
we'll
sure,
see,
and that's yeah, I agree with that, Reverend Keith.
Yeah, so we'll see where it leads Grayson Waller, but I'd like to see Grayson Waller. What's the guy that the cowboy like guy that we haven't seen in about 6 months? That to the moon. I'd like to see him.
Cameron Grimes.
Cameron Grimes, yeah, it's been so long. I had forgotten his name. But, I'd like to see Grayson Waller, Cameron Grimes, Bron Breakker. They could even use Von Wagner up there as a guy, like a Baron Corbin type guy that gives you a quality match but loses. You know, I could see Von Wagner coming up because he loses all the time anyway, and now he's without a manager, according to the stip. So those are four guys that I could see up there. I could see Zoe Stark. She's definitely ready for the main roster. As far as the other women, I probably would just keep them down there for now, and then maybe later in the year bring some of them up to fill out spots. But right now you got a lot of women. Like you mentioned Lacey, you've got Zaya Lee, Tegan Knox, Natty. The list goes. Tamina we haven't seen in about 6 months. You got a whole bunch of women that you don't even see. Dana Brooke hasn't been seen on TV. It just goes on, and it's sad. You know, you basically are highlighting the same 5 to 6 women on both shows, both Raw and SmackDown each week. I heard you mention about Bianca, shifting gears from NXT. I heard you mentioning about maybe once they do the draft, having Bianca and what's her name, Rhea, in a program. But I have a feeling they may wait till the end of the year to do that and maybe slide someone else into a title match. Who can you see challenging Bianca next for the Raw Women's Championship?
Yeah, I mean, part of it does depend on what happens in the draft because, you know, right now with the draft coming up, you have the entire roster to choose from. You know, it's not just the Raw women, but any of them can be moved over to feud with Bianca Belair. So, you know, it's fair game for everyone. I mean, you could do, you know, looking at the list, I mean, you know, there's been pieces of the Bayley's group breaking up. So, I mean, you could do Io Sky. You could do Dakota Kai, although they haven't really made their bones as singles wrestlers yet. Piper Niven is someone. Bianca's fought her so much, though, but that putting her on her shoulders always gets such a big pop. And so, yes. You know, that's a name who I could see. You know, there are not a lot of other women. You know, Ronda Rousey, I know that she's one half of you know, the team with Shayna Baszler, but, you know, and I know that's what she wants to do. You know, she wants to team with Shayna right now. She wanted to get away from Charlotte, but maybe she's seen that the women's tag division is not all that it's cracked up to be, and you know, once she gets healed from her broken hand or wrist or forearm or whatever it was, that, you know, Rousey and Belair is kind of an interesting dichotomy with their very different personalities. And the same with Baszler, you know. I think that Triple H sort of booked her better on the main roster than Vince McMahon did. Of course, he booked her so well in NXT. Who knows if that's going to continue with Vince back in charge. But those are, I mean, there's very few, right? I mean, we just haven't seen them really take the opportunity to build up some of these. And I think that was what John talked about his email. You know, they haven't really taken the opportunity to build some of these lower card women up to where you can really pick them out as someone who would have a legitimate shot against Bianca Belair.
True. I like the dichotomy with Ronda and Bianca down the road once Ronda is fully healed. We haven't seen too much of Ronda, period, because of her injury. But I think, like you mentioned, that would be interesting because Bianca and Ronda haven't had any type of interaction to my knowledge, not even at Survivor Series, if I can recall. I'm going to have to look that up. But I don't recall them ever having any interaction either on screen or backstage or whatever. Have you?
No, I don't. You know, Ronda's always been on SmackDown for the most part, Bianca on Raw, so I don't know that they've really crossed paths all that much.
Right, so that would be fresh. My third and final point of the evening centers on the tag team title rematch that's scheduled for the 28th, and I think that's the same night that the draft begins on SmackDown on Fox. I am predicting that the Usos will get those belts back for a number of reasons, not only to appease the Tribal Chief, but also we all know that both Sammy and Kevin Owens do not go to Saudi Arabia. And, you know, that's the next pay-per-view after Puerto Rico. I think it's May 27th. So they probably will want to have the tag titles defended there, and especially since they renamed that show Night of Champions, and typically Night of Champions, even going back to WCW days, you always had your main titles defended. And I really believe that it would be better anyway for both Sammy and Kevin Owens to resume their singles run, because it seemed like they make better opponents for the heels as single wrestlers as opposed to tag wrestlers. The same with Matt Riddle. You know, these are three guys combined that work better, in my opinion, individually than they do as in a tag team. So what are your thoughts on that tag team title match that's coming up?
I think it would be incredibly sad if one of the major reasons that Cody lost at WrestleMania was to let the story play out of the Usos being on the wrong side of Roman Reigns because they had lost the titles, if that ended so soon in a matter of weeks. You know, I think that would be not great. You know, I agree with your reading of the tea leaves that, you know, Clash of Champions or Night of Champions, they could always get away with not having the title tag titles. Lord knows WWE has enough titles that if the tag titles are not defended at in Saudi Arabia, you know, it may not be a huge loss. They could always do an injury angle or something like that where, you know, the Usos maybe lose, but Zayn or Owens gets injured and that knocks them out of that show at Saudi Arabia, but they're still able to hold on to the championship. They don't have to, you know, forfeit them or anything like that. So there are ways around that. And I think that would be my preference. I do, you know, Sammy and Kevin are very valuable as singles wrestlers. I do agree. But I think them antagonizing the Usos and by virtue of that, the tribal chief and the bloodline as a whole, by virtue of holding the champion, just by existing as tag champs, I would like to see that play out a little longer, you know, because I think there is value in that as much as, you know, Roman Reigns is champion, you know, and things like that. So, you know, that's kind of my take on it. I hope they don't lose. I'm with you, though. I could see a scenario where the Usos win it back. I definitely don't think it's a slam dunk that Zayn and Owens retain.
Right. And I just, again, aside from the political aspects of the booking leading up to the Saudi show, I just feel strongly that Sammy and Kevin are more valuable to the roster, especially with the impending draft, as singles wrestlers as opposed to being in a tag team. And the way that they've been booking the matches thus far, I see it going back to that pattern, simply because if you notice, like with all of the matches, they're all running out and helping each other. Like in these singles matches that they book predictably on Raw, you know that Solo's going to interfere, or if it's one of them against Solo, you know Solo's going to go over or try to beat down somebody after the Samoan spike, and then the other guy runs in to help to make the save. It's normally singles matches that they are booking. That's where I'm going with this, as opposed to having Sammy and KO wrestle tag teams. You know what I mean? They mainly are focusing on them wrestling in individual matches. So if that's the way that they are booking, then I think that they're going to have them lose so that they can continue to wrestle as singles competitors, just like we all know Riddle is not going to stay with them. He's helping them now. But I can see a scenario where Riddle, you know, breaks off from them and he continues his solo run, or Randy will come back and screw Riddle and then they'll get into a feud. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, go ahead.
No. Go ahead. I wanted to hear your side. Go ahead, sir.
Well, I was just going to say, you know, the booking of Riddle is interesting. You know, him being attacked on SmackDown and basically written off for the time being. Like, that was an interesting choice for someone who's just come back and seems to be positioned as doing something meaningful. So I'm kind of interested to see where they go with Riddle after that. But definitely, Reverend Keith, we'll have to keep our eye on that, and we'll talk more about that next week here on Wrestling Night in America. Appreciate the phone call, and good hearing from you again.
Same here. And by the way, I just want to make you aware, Riddle is wrestling on the house show circuit. He wrestled in the 6-man main event last night at Rio Rancho, New Mexico, in winning ways that the babyfaces went over. So he is still wrestling, Riddle, even though they may have done that angle Friday. He's still doing the house show scene this weekend. So he may be back sooner than we think on television. But again, Greg, nice talking to you. Have a wonderful week, and go easy on those middle school kids, okay?
All right. I will try, Reverend Keith. I appreciate the vote of confidence for this week. We are hitting a long stretch without break. We don't have another day off until Memorial Day at the end of May. So we're just beginning a really long stretch, and state testing coming up next month. So it's going to be brutal, not only for the kids, but the teachers as well. So hopefully I won't take it out on the callers here on Wrestling Night in America. Speaking of callers, we'll go to DJ from Miami. DJ, happy to have you here on Wrestling Night in America. What's on your mind tonight?
I guess we can start with WWE because you guys were talking about WWE. There's not too much to talk about. I was talking to my friend. He thinks that LA Knight might win the Money in the Bank. I mean, I don't know where they're going to put him on the draft. I hope it's Raw. I mean, he's really over. They got to pull the trigger with him sooner or later. I mean, I don't know if he does, they'll do the Fury thing with him. But where do you really see, you know, LA Knight? Maybe after SummerSlam, you think?
LA Knight is really one of the interesting guys that we're going to keep an eye on during Vince's run back in creative. Because if you remember, Knight was a guy who was taken off TV because Vince didn't like him. I don't know if he looked at Vince the wrong way or questioned the booking on something, but, you know, he was part of the Maximum Male Models, and then they brought in Maxine to basically replace him. And then when Triple H took over, LA Knight was back, and he was LA Knight instead of Max Dupri. So, you know, did Vince's opinion of LA Knight change having seen him as a character like this on the main roster, or is it going to go back to LA Knight being one of those guys who maybe falls down the card a little bit with Vince back in charge? Like, how is that going to work? So I would be surprised if he won Money in the Bank, just because we know that usually when Vince has an idea about someone, it doesn't often change. So I'm not sure that he sees LA Knight in the same way that Triple H saw him in terms of booking. But I think there are worse guys to get the Money in the Bank briefcase. He certainly got the talking down in terms of having the Money in the Bank briefcase and being able to brag about it and all that kind of stuff. I wouldn't see him winning the title if he were to win the briefcase, but he's certainly an interesting guy to consider in that role.
Yeah. I like him, so, and he's over.
Yeah.
Okay. Switching tracks, going to, like, talking about championships. The other night, it's funny that Sting is like, I don't need a championship, I'm winding down. But Darby, at the end of the day, is probably going to get the chip. Maybe, I don't know, 6 months, whatever, but Sting's not ready to go. But if Sting does go, he's going to fight Darby, and I'm pretty sure he's going to get the belt. I mean, I'm pretty sure he's not going to just leave without the belt. Or what do you really think at the end of the day, Sting will not going to go back to WWE for his last match? I mean, who do you think it's going to be, Darby? You think it's going to be somebody older, younger? Who do you really think they're going to bring in? I don't know, in general.
For his last match?
Yeah, because, you know, he said he's winding down, so, I mean,
yeah.
What do you
think? I think it could be Darby, and not in a feuding type of situation, but as a, you know, Sting has the pull to choose who he wants his last match to be with, and in storyline, it's kind of like a passing of the torch, right? You know, Sting saying to Darby, if you can beat me, you don't really need me anymore as a guide. And so I think it would, you know, they've been, if Sting's last match is in AEW, I can't think of a better opponent just because of how intertwined those two have been since Sting entered AEW. And, you know, if you take out the championship part of it, which Sting did say, like, you know, he's not going for championships, which, you know, has been pretty obvious. If he was in a championship mindset, I'm sure AEW would have put him in that situation by now, because Father Time is definitely working against him. You know, if you rule out the championships in a big, you know, big singles match, I think Darby Allin is the right guy to go with. Who knows when that time is, whether it's, you know, later this year, next year, whatever the case may be. But I would think that all roads lead to Darby Allin based on the story that they've told since Sting's been in AEW.
Let me ask you this, though. Do you think, because of his, you know, like you just said, getting older and the time's winding down, do you think that they would need the championship for more eyes on him because he's going to retire like that? Or do you think, he's going to retire, we're just going to watch, everybody's going to watch him?
Yeah, I don't think you need the title for a retirement match. And I think, you know, that almost makes it worse, because if you know the guy's retiring, you know he's not going to win the title. So I don't really know what that accomplishes.
Yeah.
I think just having a Sting retirement match in and of itself is enough. So that's kind of my thought on it. DJ, go back to you for your final question for us tonight.
Okay, my final question is staying with the same company. I'm just so confused now that they're saying all this stuff like Punk wants to work with the Elite, but they don't want to. Punk wants to play nice, and nobody wants to play. I don't get it. Like, just stay home. Just, you know, run your contract out. You know what I'm saying? There's other things out there you can do, and, you know, you're rich as hell. You're hurt. I don't know why you want to come back. Like, you know, everybody does it. It's like 50-50, 40-60 in the locker room. Like, I'm just don't know what they're going to really do.
Kind of on the same wavelength as you. You know, we know that wrestlers are wired a bit differently, but if you're, you know, if you're Phil Brooks, like, just chill. Like, you know, he's a guy who can make money doing other things. He's got other talents beside pro wrestling, but we know that when that pro wrestling bug bites, it's hard to let go of it, right? So, you know, he's a guy who, by all accounts, at least from Dax Harwood on his podcast, you know, Punk still wants to be a part of wrestling. And I don't think WWE is an option for him, especially with Vince back. I don't think there's any other company that would certainly pay him the same that AEW would, but also, like, you know, it's an ego thing. Like, he could probably go to NWA, but that's not going to, that's going to feel like a step down. And I'm not sure he, at this point of his career, wants to do that. So that really doesn't leave a lot of options for him. It leaves AEW or WWE if you didn't rule that out. But, you know, again, with the sale of WWE and with Vince being back in charge and even Triple H being in creative, Punk and Triple H didn't really get along. You know, there are not a lot of options if Punk wants to return to wrestling. I mean, he could show up on random indies, kind of what he was doing at one time before, you know, and do that sort of thing. But I think, I don't know. AEW, it seems like AEW are bust. So I just don't know how it's going to work. I don't see this ending well. You know what I'm saying? For AEW, for CM Punk, I just don't see this ending well. So this is a big move for Tony Khan. It's a big decision either way, whether it's to not bring CM Punk back or to bring CM Punk back. It's a huge decision either way. And this is one that, to me, he's got to get right for the sake of the locker room. So if he brings Punk back, hopefully he, you know, enough of the locker room says, look, we don't like the guy, but we'll work with him because we know that he'll bring eyeballs to the company and he'll make the company better. You know, hopefully that's the case. Hopefully it's not the locker room saying, look, Tony, it's your call, but we don't want him back. And he makes the call anyway. Because I think you're just asking for problems.
I know. But this is what I also think is it. If he's really going to come back, be 100%. Like, you know what I'm saying? I feel like he's getting hurt too much, too fast. I just feel like if you're going to come back, work out, do what you got to do. You know what I'm saying?
Well,
come
some
back
of that's out of his control, though. Some of it's age.
I'm just saying.
It's injuries and stuff like that. I don't know.
Yeah, but like, the longer you're gone, the more we're going to miss you. You know what I'm saying? So, like,
sure.
Do what you got to do, you know, then come back. Or try, you know what I'm saying? Slowly, or I don't know. Maybe slowly, I don't know, you know?
Yeah.
So, all right.
We'll see.
Next week, what else happens
during
this, you know?
All right, DP, we'll talk to you then, man. Thanks for calling in tonight. All right, folks, so that'll wrap us up for tonight. Don't forget, I'll have Darren Lilly on next week, PWTorch.com contributor. He will help me run down the Rebellion show for Impact that is happening right now. We'll also talk about NXT's Spring Break and show that will happen 2 days after our Wrestling Night in America. And I'm sure we'll talk a little WWE draft. So I hope you'll tune in then. You can find me on Twitter at Greg M. Parks and find my full-page column each and every week in the Torch newsletter. Until next week, I am Torch columnist Greg Parks signing off. Join us next week because if it's Sunday, it's Wrestling Night in America.